All right, we are back. And again, we are going overseas across the pond, this time via Skype. I'm delighted to have a real gentleman joining us. His name is Dick Parsons, just like it sounds. He is the author of A Fisher of Slaves. It is published by Author House, and that's Author House UK. You can go to BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, or Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or AuthorHouse.com. Welcome, Dick. Nice to have you with us.
I'm pleased to be with you, too.
All right. You've written a fictional book. Why did you write it, and what is it about?
Well, it's about the Atlantic slave trade, and my interest began when, on holiday with my late wife, I visited Fort George in the Gambia, which served as a trading post where cloth, pots, pans, etc. were exchanged with the local chieftains for captive Africans. And these poor creatures were kept ready for sale to the slave ships bound for the New World and kept in this fort. And as I wander through its dark, airless cells, where I can envisage terrified slaves being incarcerated, the merciless cruelty and savagery of the trade made a lasting impression on me. And later in Gambia, the former Gold Coast, I visited the forts at Cape Coast and Elmina, which jut proudly into the sea. And there I could envisage the slave ships waiting offshore, ready to load their cargo of slaves. And so, sometime, the idea of telling the story of the Atlantic slave trade through the eyes of Nathaniel, a 13-year-old apprentice serving his time in a slave ship, came. And then I added to it the efforts of the abolitionists through the life of his horrified mother, Elizabeth. And I wove a little story about love between the captain of the slave ship and an ambitious curate in between it. So it's
We've seen a lot of movies about slave ships, some of them drawn from nonfiction. In fact, most of this is drawn from nonfiction. I mean, between scurvy and beriberi and starvation and cruelty, I mean, it was the brutality was unspeakable, wasn't it? Do you address that brutality in this book?
Oh, yes, very much so. But I do also make the point that, you see, this was in 1760, something like that. And at that time, of course, in England and in other countries, I mean, we had children as young as five working down the coal mines in the dark, pulling trolleys of coal along. We had boys aged about six being pushed up the chimneys to clean them. We had men being captured and taken to serve in the Navy by the press gang, virtually as slaves. So there was an awful lot of other slavery going on at the same time. So to their eyes, perhaps making a stranger from Africa into a slave wasn't so desperately terrible. And, of course, I was talking to someone the other day, and he was saying how terribly cruel the voyage across the sea was. And, you know, Martin was so cruel. Well, yes, it was pretty horrible. But on the other hand, you've got to realize that those slaves which they bought in Africa were valuable cargo. They were going to sell them for money at the other end. So they didn't deliberately be cruel to them. They looked after them as best they could, but they had to cram them down below and keep them down below in nasty weather. So it wasn't quite so deliberate as we nowadays, with hindsight, might think. We've got to put ourselves back in that time to realize this, what was happening in the world and the country at that stage.
You obviously researched this book. How intensive was the research? What did you go through to come up with these specifics? Even though this is a fictional account, I think it's certainly indicative of non-fictional events.
Yeah, well, I did some background reading at first. I read Uncle Tom's Cabin, which I've read before, and Roots, which tells the tale of a slave going back to Africa to see where his grandparents lived. And I began to feel I knew a little bit about slaves. And then I visited our maritime museum at Greenwich, where, among other things, I was shown and held in my hand the ship's log of the African, a slave ship, whose master was John Newton. John Newton's quite a well-known guy. Conscience-stricken by this awful trade, he eventually gave up slavery and became a priest and wrote, among others, the hymn Amazing Grace, which you may know. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. Then I went to the Maritime Museum at Liverpool, and there I was shown a lot of really interesting material. The most interesting was the private diary of a mate on the slave ship. That was a great find, for it gave me a lot of information about the slaving ports he visited, his reflection of life on board, about how they treated the slaves and what happened. And that was really invaluable. It gave me confidence that my writing had a factual basis. I was also shown cuttings from the Times, one of which described the capture of a slave ship by a frigate of the King's Navy. And I modified this for the closing chapter of my book, Official Slaves. Now, Liverpool and Bristol were both slaving ports. Liverpool was, in fact, the bigger of the two, but I chose Bristol because I knew a little bit about Bristol. I'd lived there a little while, and there I went and saw Broad Quay, where the ships would berth, and the streets around it, such as King Street and Queen Square, which you could see were obviously enriched by the profits of the slave trade. And there are other street names in Bristol, like White Ladies Road and Black Boy Hill, and that resonates with the importance of the slave trade. I also familiar myself with the port and its difficult exit and entrance to the Avon Gorge.
Dick, what about the title of the book, the symbolism, the meaning? How did you come up with the title, A Fisher of Slaves?
Well, titles of the book are really quite difficult to come by, but suddenly you get a little bit of inspiration. And you see, in my book, I have the bishop coming to... You must remember, Elizabeth is a daughter of a rector in a little Gloucester village, and the bishop's coming round to preach to the people of that church. And he bases his sermon on the gospel where Jesus sees Peter and Andrew casting their net into the Sea of Galilee, for they were fishermen, and he says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Well, by that he meant, of course, he's going to use them to bring people to him to hear his message. And Elizabeth is a bit struck by that, by the bishop's sermon and one thing or another, and she's still desperately worried about her son serving the slave trade. And later, when the bishop asks her about Nathaniel, her son, she's wrought with guilt and she sobs, and she tells him that due to her stupidity, he's serving a slave ship and bringing people into slavery. And distraught, she says, I've made him a fisher of slaves.
Dick, are you the author of other books?
Yes, I've written two others.
You've written two others. Same genre, same subject matter?
Well, no. I've written a book called Turbans. My late wife, Anne, was a daughter of a chief justice in Allahabad in India, when India was a colony. And her great-grandfather was a major general in the army and relieved Kabul when it was taken by the Afghans at one stage. So there's quite a lot of Indian history in the family. And I've been to India a lot, and I served in the Navy in Ceylon and places like that. So it's quite a lot of India, my sort of thoughts and my dear wife's thoughts. And so I tell the story of that book. It's a tale about a girl called Trudy, born out of wedlock, whose father's a high court judge in colonial India. And she goes out there before going to university. This is just before the last war, World War II, in search for her real mother, because she understands that she's not she's a product of a liaison. And on the way out, she falls in love with Richard, a naval lieutenant, joining a destroyer in Singapore. And on the fancy dress ball at the end of the voyage, he turns up in a Sikh's outfit with a turban on his head. And, well, he goes off to his ship, and she goes, finds her mother's real grave and so on. And then they have a whirlwind romance with Richard in Colombo, but later learns that his ship's been sunk by the Japanese. Of course, as you can imagine, she's traumatized, and she seeks a comfort by nipping out on her pony and getting lost. The pony.
All right. I'd love to listen to you on and on. It's been great. The book is Dick Parsons, It's called A Fisher of Slaves, and it's published by Author House. Thanks for joining us directly from the UK. And stay on as we go to a break, okay? Don't hang up. Don't disconnect. This is